Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, mañana will be televised. Brought to you commercial-free today by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen for all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. Wherever you are, we welcome you on this Thursday afternoon to a special edition, a very special edition, of the program all about TV's current and future. 68 degrees at the top of the hour. We got an extra special 90-minute show for you, and we'll tell you right now who the guests are. It's a great all-star parade. Coming up in a few minutes, live from Los Angeles, we will have the director and executive producer of the long-awaited Netflix series that premieres today starring Mike Myers, The Penneberg. Plus, an hour from now, we'll be joined here in New York by none other than Meredith Scardino, the executive producer and showrunner of the popular Peacock series just started today with 3 new episodes of Season 2, Girls 5 Eva. And in between our second half hour, we go live to the opening day of Series Fest, the Denver-based TV festival that for the first time in 3 years is back in person. We'll talk to one of its key organizers, the initiative's producer, Lauren Grimshaw Sloan. And we may have breaking news from there that was announced a few hours ago. So we'll talk to Lauren, hopefully, about that. Plus, we have news notes, including news that has already happened on this final day of Digital Content New Fronts 2022 here in the Big Apple, and our classic trivia question as well. And if you have a question or comment for any of our guests, you know what to do. Ring them in. Here's the phone number, 646-652-2906. At 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. And don't forget, we've got our chat room in business for you. It's operational right now. It's SimonApple04, and you will find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, tune in, screen, follow the instructions, let's even live with you. So that we can have as much time as possible with our guests and you with your phone calls and chat reaction. Couple of differences from normal episodes. We are going commercial-free today. We will have only one promotional break, quarter past the hour or quarter to the hour, each half hour. And we will do our news notes, which we normally do at the beginning of the show, after our first break at the bottom of the hour. So right now, joining us live from Los Angeles in the first of our two big internet radio exclusives, the executive producer and director of the new Mike Myers series on Netflix, which premiered earlier today, The Penneberg, Tim Kirkby. Tim, congratulations and welcome to the program. What's it like to finally have this series, which has been in long gestation for a number of factors, I'm sure the pandemic included, that it's finally out and people are finally seeing the latest work from Mike Myers?
I mean, you know, it's fantastic because it's been, you know, I've been working on it for a long, long time, almost 3 years. God, I spent a mic in 2018, maybe, about it. And then a year went by, and we worked out again. And then it took 6 months to get the kind of writing up and running. And then there was a thing, COVID hit. And, you know, it feels like it's been working like forever. But what that does is mean that, you know, all the ideas, we have many, many discussions about it. And he's such a great creative, open guy. And, you know, we just laugh and giggle together as we cook up the bizarre ideas together. And finally, it's here. You know, the first year was tricky for me during COVID. And the other sort of, you know, we were putting it together, putting it right. So I'm super stoked that it's finished, it's aligned, it's real. And it's out there for the world to see. So I'm stoked. I'm kind of, I'm really just intrigued and excited. Happy you're going to find it. Hopefully they'll, you know, enjoy it and embrace it as much as we have.
Mike has made a habit in his career, whether he's doing film or television, of doing projects where he can play more than one character. What inspired him to do this series and you get inspired to direct it?
Well, he's one of the best characters at Seattle. He loves Stephen Lynch. He's had this very natural gift for military for he's had quite a life, and he seems he's got a very much energy rattling around in him. So he's kind of characteristics and he's brilliant. And I think he wanted to make some of them secret societies and sort of about sort of politics and trying to anchor it in some sort of world truth and to try out some of these brilliant characters that he's been growing up for many, many years and he had in his back pocket. And for me, when I sit down and watch Star Wars television, it's always the movies from the 70s, it's kind of like Zardos, Obi's Run, and how else is Tony Lanza, kind of really abstract, sort of, strange films, and sort of these TV series like Quasar and Sapphire and Steel hugely influenced me. So when I spoke to Mike about this idea, it was an opportunity to use and reference some of these ideas that have been going on here for many years. And you have to find the right tone, and you're not doing it just for the sake of it, and I wanted to shape it like a drama, and then you infuse it with comedy, and you have comedy running through it, it's dramatic, and it feels... It was pretty epic in this golden age of television where these streamers are very much trusting and allowing the creators to take the lead. We were honored that Netflix really helped us out and just were there to assist and to come in where necessary and the project grew and grew and ideas changed and story changed and the characters changed as well. It's really been a lot of results and also challenging to get the story that we wanted to tell, really. I think there's a bit of society out there and the Masons and the sort of Illuminati, and there's still some mysteries out there that we don't know. We wanted to tackle some of that and sort of try and stick it into real life to try and make it so believable as well. So, it's got a lot of influences in there. It's delivered on love, and it's got some strong themes about global warming. It's quite different in some of the things, and I like a challenge. Like, I want to create worlds and world build and just put the scaffolding around Mike so that he is allowed to play and be funny and be funny in front of the camera, which is what he did. He's clearing his mind and gets to it in the performance and he gives himself the comedy.
Back in the 1970s, the great TV and later film writer Paddy Chayefsky put together an amazing film called Network, which was an allegory about what television could become, and also the role that various aspects of the media could play in what turned out to be a very prophetic future. Was Network an inspiration to either you or Mike about how this series went? Because for those who don't know, the premise of this series is that you have this journalist who is played by Myers, who is trying to expose through news programming or talk programming this secret society of five people who control a super amount of power in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, certainly to Mike. I mean, he grew up in Canada. Local news was obviously, he watched that and he absorbed it. And I think he wanted to almost like take the first small presenter, but with the biggest world problem and see how that would match together. Since there was a way that this local presenter, who were heroes in their country or state, the global elite really, and to sort of just find out what's there. So, and some of that space, some of that being, being chosen, very much so. I mean, some of those sort of conspiracy films, the 73 Days of the Condor, Parallax View, Conversation, you know, that's all good stuff, and it all sort of feels alive today with fake news and where that's come from, the internet and Twitter. And so, yeah, he's very much wanted to join that conversation and to explore it. Like one of the characters in the show invented fake news, you know, so we've got this sort of superconceived called Mentor, which is the, I wouldn't say the truth, it inputs all the world news and then formats an answer. So we're kind of like failing 2001. So yeah, that is sort of territory that we both enjoy and looking at and trying to make it on some level believable, you know. And I think, of course,
Michael Key, we both know are very, very funny and very perceptive people, I might add, both play characters who have to deal with one way or another with climate change. Did you and Mike sort of see this not only as a satire on television or a satire on science fiction, but also a satire on how we're perceiving climate change or how we don't?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we wanted to tackle the most sort of imminent and biggest problem that is ahead of us, and we had to comment on it. We wanted to. And it was really important to get both those characters, but maybe, you know, more sort of key to Michael Key's character, who plays Professor Clark, that he's been sort of spotted by the Pentaveret. He's an expert. They're run by experts. And he has been trying to crack cold fusion, which would power this lens that, you know, in between the Earth and the Sun, that would lower the global temperature by 1 degree. However crazy that sounds, it's actually a genuine idea that's out there. I don't think we could have done the show without mentioning climate change and global warming, because it's around us all the time. It's something that needs talking about and putting on the table. So we've tried to be as truthful. Obviously, we didn't want to make a fun of what they were doing, but so we tried to anchor it in some truth. And actually, some of the lines that Keegan Professor Clark has is all obviously based in science. And you know, so we try to look after that that argument and conversation as much as possible. It's a big theme for us running through. It sort of bookends the series as well.
The long-awaited Mike Myers series on Netflix, The Pentaveret, is now out, and we are speaking live from Los Angeles with Tim Kirschby, the director and executive producer. He joins us live, one of two exclusive interviews coming your way this 90 minutes. Here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm on with you live from New York, where it is 68 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Tim? Just take the phone, make the phone go. All you got to do is call in at 646 646- 652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We are coming to you an hour earlier than normal because of what's going on with the Digital Content New Front and the way our guests are scheduled today. But we will be back at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific tomorrow. And among our guests, we will have from ABC's Golf Series, Holy Moly, which started its fourth season on Tuesday, executive producer Charles Walker. He's back with us. And in case you haven't heard, the Muppets have joined in that miniature golf tournament along with co-host Rob Riggle and Joe Tessitore as Stephen Curry and all sorts of other wonderful people, too. Charles Walker, executive producer of Holy Moly, he's back with us. That's tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And next Monday on the program, my lead guest will be one of the co-stars of the brand-new Star Trek series, Strange New Worlds, that premieres tomorrow on Paramount+. It is already getting sensational reviews as being A, the best Star Trek series in years, B, the best Star Trek series in decades, C, the best new Star Trek series since Star Trek The Next Generation, and a love letter to the original. That's what one critic had to say. My guest is going to be one of the co-stars of the series, and maybe the most unique co-star of them all. His name is Bruce Horak. He's been acting for 25 years. He's also a writer and producer and director, and he's done it all in spite of the fact that one eye is blind and he has big trouble with the other. And now he is getting one of his big breakthrough roles here in the United States with Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Again, it's on Paramount Plus starting tomorrow. We'll have him live. Monday is our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tim, what is it like to direct somebody like Mike, who is in multiple characters, sometimes maybe on the same day you shoot? You know, one day he's the journalist trying to crack the case of the Pentavert. Another day he's a media mogul. Another day he's an exiled Russian oligarch. I mean, he's so many different characters. How do you, as a director, deal with that?
Well, as I said, I mean, you know, the series was sort of heavily discussed between us over the entire sort of lockdown year. And he would do the impressions and the characters and we'd twist them and form them. And then, you know, just a lot of preparation. I mean, it's interesting when he is in certain characters because he behaves differently according to what character he's in. So if he's Bruce, which is a sort of media mogul sort of, he's joking around and he's like an Aussie and he's being funny and making these funny comments. If he's Nishu, same sort of thing. I mean, look, you know, he's going to come on set with a different flavor every day. And I know these characters and I know Mike. We spend a lot of time pre the shoot. So I know that he can give as much as he can in front of the camera. He's incredibly giving and raw and pure. And he wants direction. He wants you to mold it and tweak it and offer. And he will always try things. You know, to me, the mark of a brilliant comedy actor performer is that they will try things. Cause we don't know if it's going to work. We don't know what the best laugh is, but you have to try. So once that camera's rolling, I don't cut. I keep it rolling and I'm sit off camera and chipping the odd sort of notes. And then we go back and get lines and we try different things. And I try to keep them in the moment as much as I can so that he's relaxed enough to do his thing. And once he's there, it's gold. It's like he has it on tap. You know, his mind is so sharp that you can say a question, why don't you try this, and he'll put a spin on it just immediately. And he's very playful. I mean, he's incredibly playful. And then when you get the kind of Keens and Kenyon and Debbie, then it becomes this sort of extraordinary group of people just wanting it to be brilliant, but also incredibly open. And because Mike's pretty much the writer on the show as well, we do a little rehearsal to try and figure out what lines are working, what we can replace. We do it on the day, in character, in costume, with the set. It's a very sort of free and open forum, you know. It's not all locked down and... you know, and he's brilliant like that. He's happy to change things. He's happy to try things. And he'll laugh along as well. So you know, very quickly you sort of it becomes very enjoyable, because you're just, you know, you're in it together. You want the very, very best performance you can get. You know, number one in comedy is to record a comedic performance. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is tell the story. Number three, make it visually arresting. And number four, for me, is you put a good soundscape or music on it at a later date. So the number one, record the comic performance. And so I put three cameras on him because I don't know, you know, I wanted to turn to certain characters. And obviously, you know, not all the time, but when we're in that main chamber, when there's five Mike Myers sitting around the table, he only comes in on one day as one character. The next day he'll come in as a different character. So I've just got to be careful. If he says something funny one day to another character who's obviously a stand-in, then I've got to make sure that when I do the other side of that conversation, I play back and remind him of the comment that one of the previous characters said to him. So it's a bit of a Jenga, shooting multi-character, but also incredibly challenging and rewarding, because you're just, you know, it's, you know, every time that camera turns over, you're getting comedy gold.
You also have a narrator, the very distinguished actor Jeremy Irons. And I'm curious, is this the first time in your directing career that you've directed a narrator? And if so, how do you approach that? Like, a lot of people think that whether a narrator is on camera, as let's say Rod Serling was in The Twilight Zone, and other people during other iterations, like Jordan Peele most recently and Forrest Whitaker when it was done on UPN, or off camera, like the famous control voice for The Outer Limits, played brilliantly by Vic Perrin, that a lot of people think, well, you just show up and you either record your voice or you show up on camera and do it. But a lot of people, I think, would be very surprised to know that really directors and writers have a very important say in how it gets done. So I'm curious, you know, what kind of role did you have with Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's a performance at the end of the day. So we zoomed Jeremy to say hi, and he's very lovely, and he had a couple of notes on what was being said. And then when we did the record, it was just me, him, and Mike, and Jeremy just wants it to be what we want. And again, you know, good actors will try things and don't mind the notes and you know, rarely question it. So once you hear it for the first time, my instinct, yeah, I immediately go, oh, that's fantastic, that's great, why don't we try this? And Jeremy would laugh and go, okay, let's do it. So whether that means, you know, be slightly more annoyed or be more sort of cocky about it or we change a couple of lines, you know, it is a performance. It's the same as being on set in front of the camera. If it's just a voiceover, then it lacks the sort of soul. And look, you know, all actors, whoever you are, they all want a note. They don't know how good it is. They have no idea. So they need you to say, if you like it, or you like it, but, or actually I think you can do another one. And they don't mind that. They never mind. But they like a reaction, and they like a note. And with Jeremy, you know, we had six episodes, and he just went through. He did about three or four of each. Different flavors, we changed the lines, and then he'd add something, and we were just laughing, the three of us, and, you know, he's brilliant, and it's Jeremy Irons, and he was sitting there in his castle in Ireland, smoking roll-ups, and he's a very cool man, and it was an utter pleasure, because, you know, when it's like that, it doesn't feel like work, it just feels like three people just having a laugh, and with a very sort of funny words, And the ego's left at the door. You know, it's just you just want to make it as funny and as such a brilliant as possible, really. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm audience member number one, so I always look at everything as a guy sitting at home putting the television on and seeing it, and what do I want to see? So if someone like Jeremy read it and it just sort of hit it or nailed the tone,
I'm very happy to say to someone, actually, you know what, why don't we just try this? You know, just to get it in a place, you know, that is correct. Because as I say, they don't know. But usually they're just sort of, they feel it's a good place, but they don't fully know. They can't look at it from the outside. So, and Jeremy Irons, he's the best, but he does, you know, like everyone, they want a discussion on what they've just done. Because, you know, a lot of sort of voiceovers, you just sort of walk into a booth, as you say, and you do it and you walk out. But no, it's a performance. It's a comedy performance, and that's number one. You've got to get it right. But yeah, he's the best. I loved him. He was good fun.
Yeah, it really is a fine art to write and direct narration. And for those of you who love classic TV, you want two more examples of the difference writing and directing can make for a narrator. Check out the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which had for years the great writer James Allen Ardies writing those wonderful intros and outros for the master of suspense, including the digs at the sponsor. Or Aaron Spelling, who got his break with his intros for Dick Powell's Zane Grey Theater, classic tales of the West done in a very unique way. The narration is far different than what you expect. Tim, before we go, have you and Mike left the door open for a second season if this first season turned out to be a great success?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was one season only.
Well, we will certainly see. There you go. The Penaburret. It's Netflix's long-awaited new series starring Mike Myers, and as you know, Mike, it's multiple roles all the way. It is already premiered and it is now playing on Netflix, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. More details about the program online, go to Netflix.com. It's Netflix.com. The Penaburret, starring Mike Myers in all sorts of roles, and Tim Kirkby as the director and executive producer. Tim, thank you again for taking the time on opening day of your series to be with us. Congratulations to you, Mike, everybody on the crew and cast for the job you're doing, and hopefully what takes place today, the beginning of a great long run. And there you go. Tim Kirkby from The Penaburret and Mike Myers, wonderful comment for Netflix, joining us live from Los Angeles. You are listening to a special expanded edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on the Cinco de Mayo Thursday of 2022. Standing up with you live from New York. Coming up in our next half hour, we've got news notes, including the big story from the digital content news front that is going into its final hours as we speak here in the Big Apple. And then we're going to go live to the opening day of SiriusXM 2022, which kicked off earlier today. And we'll be speaking with one of the key organizers of that event, which is going in person for the first time in 3 years, Initiative's producer, Lauren Grimshaw Sloan. And coming up, the top of the hour, another Internet Radio exclusive, Meredith Scardino, the executive producer and showrunner of the popular Peacock series that also starred its second season today, Girls 5 Ever. And we will get to all of that after we pause briefly at the bottom of the hour for web identification. The best Internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tuner.com, and it reaches over 70 million listeners around the world every month collectively and growing. On BTR tonight, check out the Hilltop Radio Show. It's a great music hour for you, and it all starts tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Hilltop Radio Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our special 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on Cinco de Mayo, Thursday, 2022. Somehow I'm with you live from New York, 70 degrees at the bottom of the hour. More guests coming your way over the course of the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Pick up the phone and call in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up shortly, we go live to Denver, and we speak with one of the founders of SiriusXM 2022, just started earlier today in the Mile High City. Lauren Grimshaw Sloan will join us right from there. But first, here's news notes. We are in the home stretch of Digital Content News Fronts 2022, the annual parade of showcase for services running over the internet, mobile, and smart TV products. The big story this final day, a wave, and I do mean a wave, of new services coming soon, smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. A&E Network will go forward with That's 4UV, is a channel-mixing scripted and unscripted series directed at and by communities of color. SUV will launch, or 4UV, will launch this fall. Also before 2022 ends, Nuestra TV will operate a bilingual on-demand venture involving a 40-channel bundle, 15,000 hours of on-demand fare in both English and Spanish, a games network, and a user-generated content showcase. Latino viewers also can look ahead to an all-kid bid net this August from Canela Media, while Taste Made Home, featuring shows for homeowners and renters, begins this summer. Incidentally, the digital content fronts will end tonight with special events from Vivo, the music video service, a new venture from Warner Music Group. Both events will be in person in Manhattan. And we hope to bring you more about those ventures as time goes on. Now, quickies before our next guest. CBS has given a rare two-season renewal to The Equalizer. The Queen Latifah starring reboot will keep playing Sunday nights on CBS through mid-2024. Chicken Soup for the Soul's new ad-back on-demand service, which kicked off last month, will launch a showcase for original rom-com movies. Blake Shelton, Carson Daly, and Nikki Bella will collaborate on Farmageddon, a new USA Network game show, premiere date to be announced. Cedric the Entertainer will follow up on executive producing the Bounce TV sleeper success of last year, Johnson, with dramedy Finding Happy. Bounce will premiere the series later this year, also premiering a second season of Johnson. And season two of Rat Loves Judy hits WeTV June 9th. And that is news notes for today. Let's go out live to Denver, Colorado, and we'll find one of the co-organizers of Series Fest 2022, Initiative's producer, Lauren Grimshaw Sloan. Lauren, welcome in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. Give us the sense of where things are at, opening day and people finally getting together for your festival for the first time in 3 years.
It's pretty exciting. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful Denver day, and everybody's excited to be back together in person. So we have a really exciting lineup this year and incredible programming. We're ready for everyone to see it.
Let's talk about that lineup. You've got more than 50 individual, independently made TV series pilots, all different genres, scripted, unscripted, shorties that might become series, and they're all out to win favor not only with the public, but with industry leaders. How were they selected?
That's a great question. So, yes, the heart of our festival really is our independent pilot competition. We have an international spotlight, a collegiate spotlight, drama, comedy, and unscripted. And we have an incredible programming team where we recruit folks from all over the country, and it goes through a laborious programming process. And we have found the best of the best this year. We're really excited. You know, some have appeared at other festivals, but this is often the first time that they're going to have an in-person screening, so that, you know, Series Fest really is a networking opportunity, an incredible platform for them to find representation, production partners, potential distribution, you name it. So this is going to be an in-person celebration of their content, but also a great opportunity for them to meet fellow creators and hopefully get their foot in the door and take it to the next level.
And that's 50 pilots out of how many that were submitted this year?
Oh, you'd have to go back into the archives. We have hundreds that come in throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of separates the hundreds from the people who do this? Is there something about the pilot, the way it's produced, the way it's directed, who the stars are, or who the new faces on the horizon are? What sort of the benchmark or barometers that you and your fellow organizers use to pick the titles?
That's another good question. It's really, we're not about the independent creators. It's not about if you have a celebrity in it, if you have a high budget. It's about the quality of the project. So, you know, we've had some micro budgets, and they figure out how to stretch a dollar and can really show off the creators' sensibilities, their talent, and showing us what they can do. Versus, you know, some may have some big names that you may recognize. We also have a lot of network premieres. We have, you know, tonight we have Stars is Becoming Elizabeth, and the crew will be on the red carpet, the cast will be on the red carpet, and everyone will be in person as well. But I think that really we are trying to exhibit the emerging filmmakers, the people that haven't gotten the exposure yet that are on the cusp.
Indeed. Yesterday, you and your fellow organizers emailed people giving them your own choices for pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the choice you made.
That's true.
And why?
I chose 5150. It's an incredible project that we actually found through a meeting with the Tribeca Film Festival last year. They played virtually, and this is going to be their first in-person festival. Denzel Whitaker and John Trofre are the creators. Denzel Whitaker is a he's a current actor, but he was a child actor. You may recognize from The Great Debaters. He was in The Black Panther, and he's really transitioning to behind the camera, and it's really a really incredible kind of rip from the headline story that may sound familiar to pop culture audiences, but they do it in such a way that really addresses mental health and how media treats celebrity. And it's really incredible. And it was just the pilot. I was like, I need more episodes. It's one of those that keeps you coming back for more. So 5150, I think, is one to really keep an eye for this year. It's also executive produced by David Oyelowo. So I think that you're going to be hearing more from these creators and hopefully more episodes of this project.
Mm. By the way, is he related to Forrest Denzel? Is he related to Forrest Whitaker?
Neither.
The actor, of course,
neither.
Is the godfather of Harlem on Netflix.
Exactly. No, Denzel is not related to Washington or Whitaker, which is a coincidental name, but he's making his own name, even though it's a combination of two famous actors.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that tonight you're going to be kicking off the live event side of things with the new Star series, Becoming Elizabeth, with Anya Reiss, the creator of that series, with the co-stars
yes.
John Rittenberg and Jamie Blackley. But you're also, you have a couple of other interesting shows popping up. Rat in the Kitchen, which premiered a few weeks ago on TBS. That's going to be spotlighting the session. You also have a very interesting project that I think before you announced it, a lot of people did not know about with the actress Kate Bosworth. It's called Bring on the Dancing Horses. Talk about that.
Yes. So that was another one. It premiered virtually at Sundance this past year. But Kate Bosworth, and stars Kate Bosworth and also produced by her, and it's directed by Michael Polish. They independently created an entire series, which is something that we at SiriusFest obviously are trying to exhibit and promote. And, it can be done outside of the traditional system. So an independent series is exactly the sort of thing that we're excited to showcase here. And Michael and Kate will both be here in person for a Q&A on Monday.
Hmm. Do you know where that is going to run? Has it been determined yet where it will be on Netflix or AMC or Stars or new network?
I don't actually know of a distribution plan yet, but that's what hopefully, these sorts of festival runs will help them garner the distribution that they surely deserve.
Mm-hmm. We are doing this at a time when we are seeing an explosion of new channels and networks, an explosion of programming for mega content services like Paramount Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, Discovery Plus, Apple TV Plus, Netflix Hulu, Amazon Crackle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we've got and we also have all these networks that are now running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For example, Chicken Soup of the Soul just had their on-demand service, which had been prepared for over a year, just launched a couple weeks ago. They're already announcing five more services. They did this at their DigitalCon New Front presentation earlier this afternoon. The early buzz at the fest this year about this environment that all of these pilot makers or wannabe producers, directors, creators, stars, what are they buzzing about when it comes to this TV environment?
I think that that's just it, that there are so many different distribution platforms and there's such a need for content that everyone is excited. And it's no longer, I come from an independent film background where you would, go through a traditional method of a theatrical release. And then there was, ancillary platforms like airlines and this and that and the other. The door is just wide open now. So everyone is, exploring what's new out there, who are the current platforms that are seeking their sorts of content. And it really is a really exciting time. I mean, there's a big buzz with all the creators. We at SiriusFest pride ourselves on curating meetings for the creators with distributors, producers. We're really trying to level the playing field so that they have an opportunity to get in the door with the incredible amount of streamers that are out there right now.
Mm-hmm. A few hours ago, The Wrap, one of the popular entertainment news sites,
mm-hmm.
had a report that there's a new project mm-hmm. at SiriusFest, a new networking mm-hmm. project, which, according mm-hmm. to the story, involves tech stars involves NBC mm-hmm. Universal and Sirius XM. Can you say anything about that? And if so, what's it all about?
Absolutely. We partnered with a company called Hustle Up, and I guess the easiest way in layman's terms to explain it is it's a networking platform. Think like LinkedIn specifically for the entertainment industry. So we're really excited to get on the ground floor with them. They've launched their beta version of their app that we are offering to SiriusXM creators and attendees to join Hustle Up, get part of the conversation so that they can network directly with each other. So, you know, that you can link your IMDb profile like directly into the app so people can understand, you know, what sort of projects you've been working on, what you're looking to partner on in the future. It's a really, really exciting, you know, thing for us to get involved in and really get exposure to for our creators this year.
Mm-hmm. Is it a website? Is it a app that you
it's
can
get, app.
Like, say, so a smart TV
mm-hmm.
set or a smartphone?
Yep, it's a smartphone app. So we're going to be having QR codes for Hustle Up throughout the festival. So you just scan that. You can download the app and get connected and, you know, potentially just connect with somebody on the app and, you know, meet them at the Sea Film Center here in Denver 5 minutes later. So it's a great tool for people to kind of get to know each other within the entertainment industry specifically.
Mm. One of the big stories also of late has been the emergence of several tools that can help new shows get financed or get on the air without a middleman or a participating company. Things like NFTs, crowdfunding, crowdsourcing, blockchain, cryptocurrency,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. Do you think that's going to be the subject of discussion, especially lately with the arrival of NFTs?
That's a great question. We have not really dove into NFTs this season. That might be a topic of conversation for future years. But, you know, I think those sorts of things come up organically in conversation. So we at SiriusXM obviously are trying to keep up with the trends as much as everybody else, all the other creators. So we haven't dove too much into the NFT world yet, but you never know what's going to happen next year.
You're hearing Lauren Grimshaw Sloan. She is the initiatives producer at SiriusXM, which today, as we speak, is back in person at the Mile High City of Denver, Colorado. Next week, she joins us live for opening day this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sign on with you 2 hours ahead in New York, where it is now 7 degrees at the top of the hour, at the bottom of the hour, I should say. We are in the midst of a 90-minute special Cinco de Mayo edition of the promo about TV's current and future. Glad you're with us wherever you are listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Tune Radio. Our show is commercial-free today, thanks to our wonderful sponsor, Audible.com. with only one promotional break in each half hour. So if you have a question or comment for Lauren, don't be shy. Make your move. Call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. So you can win the brand new book, Binge Times, whose authors, by the way, will be at SiriusXM a little later on in their event. Dawn Chalewski and Dade Hayes. Dade, I saw earlier this week a couple of times at various New Front events. And if you haven't read Binge Times yet, it's great. And we're going to offer that as a prize if you have the answer to our question that we have posed for the last week and a half. So stay tuned for that. That will be at and near the top of the hour. And then right after the top of the hour, we got another big interview for you. Meredith Scardino, the executive producer and showrunner of the popular Peacock hit Girls 5 Eva, which today started Season 2 with 3 episodes available for you at Peacock, available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place. So that's all coming up before we leave you this Thursday afternoon here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Lauren, what are some of the other features, for those who have no SiriusXM, what are some of the other features that you have, like the pitch-a-thon and other ways that people can get their foot in the door?
Yes, absolutely. I think, like I was saying, that the heart of the festival is the independent content that we exhibit, and pitch-a-thon, for example, is one of those that gives people an opportunity with a project that has not yet been produced to get exposure. So the pitch-a-thon is Saturday morning for anyone that's in Denver. We partner with Working Artist Group, and they do an amazing job of coaching our pitchers to give them, you know, the skills they need to kind of hone their pitch, you know, work on their presence, because often writers are not comfortable being in front of an audience or, you know, being on camera, and they have to present their work in such a way that kind of gets the message across and makes it sellable and appealable to a producer or a distributor to come on board. So in the Pitchathon, the pitchers get to produce, or sorry, pitch their unproduced project. And this year we're really excited. We have a partnership with Dilettante Productions, or sorry, and Unreal Media. And Unreal Media is going to option one of the projects that pitches at Series Fest and take it through a writer's room and develop the project. And we also have a cash prize with the Royal Bank of Canada this year. For Pitchathon's very exciting for that reason. We have amazing projects throughout the festival, but we have some tentpole, like our concert at Red Rocks this year. We always have an event at Red Rocks where we bring in a music act, and we have a network premiere along with that. So this year we have Lake Street Dive as the performance, and Amber Ruffin is going to be there in person and show one of her favorite episodes of her show. So, I mean, I think that if, you know, you want to tell Meredith for me, maybe Girls 5 Eva could perform next year at Red Rocks for the premiere of season 3. That would be pretty great. And then we have Girls 5 Eva would be perfect for next year. We also have two innovation talks that are really exciting this year. We have W. Kamau Bell, and we have John Feltheimer, the CEO of Lionsgate, who's in conversation with Mike Fries, the CEO of Liberty Global. So, I mean, we've got the business side, we've got some network premieres, we've got everything here. So it's going to be a really exciting 6 days in Denver.
Yeah. By the way, in terms of the festival, do people have to show the vaccination card or a COVID test, or can
yep.
they, you know, is the environment better that we can go back to, or we can go to the next normal where you don't have to show proof of vaccination, or you don't have to show a negative coronavirus test, as is the case now in a lot of places here in New York?
Yes, that's what we're doing as well. Denver does not have a mask mandate, so it's strongly encouraged but not required. We do require proof of vaccination, so everyone gets a fancy purple bracelet after you show your vaccination card or your negative COVID test. So, but, yep, that's kind of the world we're living in festival land right now, so we'll see how much longer that continues.
One arena that Sirius Fest started to get into the last 2 years, but and it looks like it's going full-blown now, is podcasts. And we know that there is a lot of interest now in doing podcasts that ultimately become television series. Is that the sense where you are also, that people want to get into podcasts so that they can – that's their entry door into ultimately turning into a series?
Yes, absolutely. We've been talking to Treefort, that's obviously a big podcast producer, and we actually were highlighting one of their podcasts this year that's turned into a show about the Miami condo collapse. I think that there's a lot of synergy between podcasting and being a source material, and there's just a lot of alternative streams for IP out there that people are looking to option. I mean, we've been talking to Wattpad for, you know, writers that are self-publishing their work. That's become a great source of IP for adaptation into series, and podcasts as well. I mean, I think everything from, you know, with Gaslit, that's premiering it, we're showing an episode of Gaslit with a showrunner during Series Fest, and that was originally from a podcast as well. So I think that, you know, podcasts are particularly exciting because they prove that there is a viewership and there's an audience there, and people are responding to that content, and it's just an easy transition from podcast to series. So absolutely, that's something we're highlighting as much as possible in terms of, you know, IP and garnering that loyal audience base.
What are we looking at in terms of people showing up in person for the festival this year, first time in 3? What's the sense out there of industry attendance, people who are in the position to green light shows, to be gatekeepers?
Yep.
To buy shows.
Absolutely. Festival attendance today is day one. So our first programming is next 2 hours, but we're already seeing a great turnout this year, and especially from the industry. I think people are excited to network in person. We have lots of network representation, agency representation. It's just a great way to facilitate the introductions to help these creators get to the next level. So we're absolutely seeing a massive uptick. I think virtually for the past 2 years, we, you know, saw some strides in the international community. We got a lot of folks coming in from Australia and, you know, I mean, all over Europe and Russia and all these places that they would wake up in the middle of the night and become part of a virtual series fest. And we have really garnered new audiences and new creators from across the world. And this year, I think that the domestic crowd is coming back. The New York and LA contingent where the industry, you know, really obviously is concentrated, they're coming to Denver. And we're here to welcome them with open arms.
Mm. What's been the track record in terms of pilots that showed up at your festival that have gone on to get made as TV series, or at least to be in position to become television? A couple years ago, there was a pilot that came out called Up North, which, by the way,
yep.
Later returned for a virtual panel session. Byron Allen bought the show. We don't know yet whether it will be ultimately made as a series. If he does, it would be in New York. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard much from him about that. Have you heard about what's going on with Up North? And going back to the original question, what's been, let's say, over the last year, any success stories?
That's a great question. So virtually we had a big success with a show that was called Generation 4K. And this goes back to the hunger for content. HBO Max picked it up directly as is. They didn't reshoot it. They didn't. They just picked it up as a short and exhibited it directly on the platform within weeks. So I think that, you know, there's certainly those sorts of projects. We're hoping to see more, you know, direct correlation between showing at Series Fest and it being picked up through an introduction, through, you know, whatever means, because we're really positioning ourselves to be that sort of marketplace. We had a project called Everyone's Doing Great with James Lafferty and Stephen Coletti starred and produced that project that got picked up from Hulu. They independently financed and shot an entire series, a whole season, exhibited at Series Fest, and it got purchased during, I think, 2021 from Hulu. So I think we're definitely seeing a direct correlation more so than we have in the past. But we also have professional development opportunities throughout the year. We have a writing initiative called the Storytellers Initiative, where writers send in their script. It's a script competition. And we have finalists that go through a workshop. And then we have a production partner that we partner with in this past iteration. It was Ben Silverman's company, Propagate, and the winner of that competition got a development deal with Ben Silverman's company. So Corey Wooten is that writer. He is in development, and they're shopping his project right now. So even there's Series Fest itself these 6 days, but throughout the year, I think we're really making strides to make those direct correlations and that direct impact.
Before you go and enjoy day one of your event, size up the whole TV festival scene where people have the opportunity to showcase pilots or possible series and ways to get them put on the air. Because it seemed that we had some festivals that, despite the pandemic, were able to hold on, like ATX and ATV out in Austin, Texas, land respectively. And on the flip side, mm-hmm. joined the New York Television Festival, which is probably the granddaddy of
yeah.
these events, and it was the event that got us started almost 15 years ago because Ned Kennedy, who was the program director at the time, was our first guest back in August of 2007. We were wondering if it will ever come back. Yet we have Norfolk and Long Island. Tribeca has picked up some of the slack by running TV pilots and running a TV festival alongside it. Whether it will do a separate one, we don't know yet. We're seeing more film festivals like Bentonville with Gina Davis and others also run TV series pilots. Sundance has done it. What's your sense of the scene? And now that it looks like the pandemic hopefully is turning into an endemic, what's your mm-hmm. sense about how quickly and how expansive the scene will come back?
You know, I think that there's always room for more on the festival circuit, honestly. I think that we're kind of the opinion that a rising tide lifts all ships. So the more opportunities that we can get for these creators to get noticed, we have some folks that just came in from the Cerebral Festival that are coming to our festival as well. So, I mean, we want to see them succeed. At the end of the day, that's the ultimate goal. If they can go to Tribeca and come to us, if they can go to, you know, whatever festivals are out there, That's the name of the game. And I think that we are really a community at Series Fest, so that if they can come here, they can meet, you know, anyone else, agents, managers, execs from, you know, whatever network, distribution platform to get them, you know, exposure for their project. That's what we're about. You know, unfortunately, with the pandemic, you never know what's going on behind closed doors, right, at every festival. You know, financing can be challenging if your main event is a live event where everyone's in a movie theater breathing the same air. So, you know, it's sad to see some of the festivals go, but I think that this is really – everyone is just so joyful to be walking in these doors, picking up their badge, seeing their fellow creators. I just don't think that festivals are going anywhere. I think that we're going to, you know, hit this endemic, and we're going to come back stronger than ever.
Well, one thing is for sure, I really hope the New York TV Festival comes back. Somebody's got to bring it back. If Terrence Gray and Aaron Day cannot do it on their own, I hope that Ann DeCastillo, who's staying on as the New York City, the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, will do something to bring this festival back. It would be really a crying shame if New York
Absolutely.
Cannot have a television festival of its own. And I hope somebody does something
to bring
it back.
I totally agree. Absolutely. Fingers are crossed for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that is a sentiment all over the place, not just where you are and where I am. And it is really great to see, after 3 years away, your festival is back, and it looks like it's going to be a super winner. We're talking Series Fest. Started today, going on as we speak, in Denver, Colorado, the Mile High City. It will continue through May 11th. For more details about the festival online, go to www.seriesfest.com. That's www.seriesfest.com. We will, later this month, once we learn who the winners of the independent pilot competition are, as is our practice, we will invite the winner in the drama category, comedy, maybe unscripted, to join us so that you can get to hear those creators and what they're up to. And one more time, for those who came in late, tell again about the new initiative that Series Fest is involved with and how they can take part of it.
Yep, the app is called Hustle Up. Check it out in the App Store. I believe it's still in the beta version, but it is LinkedIn for entertainment industry only. So it's a great way for everyone to connect with their fellow creators and industry executives.
And if any new TV series or projects come out of that venture, we will have those folks invited to come on. Lauren Grimshaw Sloan, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and all the other organizers of Series Fest. Welcome back into the public fold. Good luck with the festival. I know it's going to be a winner, and again, we look forward to having the winners of the various pilot competition categories on our show down the road.
Thank you very much.
You got it, Lauren. Take care. All the greatest.
Thanks, you too.
Lauren Grimshaw Sloan, the initiatives producer at Series Fest 2022, joining us live from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Once again, for all details, the festival continues through May 11th. SeriesBest.com. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Get your thinking caps on, because if you are first with the correct answer by email, you will win the wonderful new book about television's current and future, Binge Time, whose writers Dawn Chmielewski and Dade Hayes will be at Series Best for a special panel session, and that panel session will be taking place with a special book signing as well. So here's the question. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? Robert Conrad, actor, played so many roles in so many different TV series, as star, co-star. What was his first television series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First direct answer, you win, Binge Times. And if you don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post a question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon. TWBT, the Simon Applebaum on Twitter, and UBC Simon, TWBT, on Twitter. Remember, in order to be in, as we say around here, you got to play in. Do so, and all the very best. Coming up at the top of this hour, we'll be joined here in New York by Meredith Scardino, the executive producer and showrunner of the Peacock hit Girls 5 Eva. She joins me after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Highlight of every day here on BTR's Kings in the Morning. Check it out tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern. That's 8 a.m. Pacific. Jay King and crew, they'll entertain you, inform you, and a lot of other things too. Kings in the Morning, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvie Televised Cinco de Mayo 20th edition. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Sound out with you live from New York. We are a commercial-free 90-minute show, and we're in our final half hour. If you have a question or comment for our final guest of the day, give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you call in from across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Or use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it right now at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, whether you use the phone or the room, we hear you, and you get to interact with us. And while the phone is on the air, you connect up by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio speaker tune screen. Follow the instructions. I'll see you live with you. Last year, Peacock created a series about a one-hit wonder girl group that decided to make a comeback. The show is called Girls 5 Eva, and it turned out to be one of the big surprise hits of the entire year. So much so that Peacock ran to the second season, and the first few episodes of the second season are now available today. Joining us live in an inter-radio exclusive from the Big Apple, the executive producer and showrunner of Girls 5 Eva, Meredith Sardino. Meredith, congratulations. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Simon. I don't know
you
how
welcome.
You talk
and
so much.
And I've seen
much.
The reviews
how
on Rotten Tomatoes, both from critics and from viewers, and it looks like your second season is off to a rip-roaring start.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, no, it's exciting to see. I mean, I'm always just like, you know, you create a thing and throw it out there, and you hope it resonates with people. So I'm encouraged and excited.
What did you and your cast expect from the reaction to season one, and also what was unexpected?
Well, everything was kind of unexpected because we created it. We were one of the first shows to go into production during COVID. We shot in October of 2020, and, you know, my writer's room started virtually in June. So it was all like, okay, we're doing it. Like, it all just felt like we were also grateful to go to work, but it was crazy. And then and we were so proud of the product, like, that we were able to kind of pull off under the circumstances. And I had no idea what to expect. It was it's my first show I've ever created. So it was just, and it was on a new, you know, streamer, and the Olympics had been moved. And so it was just like, you know, I have no idea who had Peacock and if people were going to see it. And thankfully, you know, Peacock really, really pushed it. And we're just such good partners and really promoted the hell out of it. So hopefully it's getting eyeballs. And yeah, we were all just delighted that it made other people feel the way we felt about it.
In this era of plentiful, diverse, smart, soon to be interactive television, more and more people creating shows are getting the opportunity to have their first show green-lighted and supported and get on the air. How did you get yourself in the position to have Girls 5 Ever, your first out of the block, approved and ready to be produced?
Well, I mean, I had a long career in rooms, just not my show, but I had started my career in late night comedy. So I've written for a bunch of different shows. And the one I worked for the longest was I spent 6 years at the Colbert Report with Stephen Colbert. And then from there, I jumped to like episodic and worked on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt for all four seasons, as well as an interactive movie. So once I started working with Tina and Robert, Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, who co-created Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and of course 30 Rock, and they're geniuses, I was just loved being in that world. It was the their type of storytelling is something that like really fits me like a glove. I absolutely love it. Like the high jokes per minute and the, you know, sort of the way we view the world and all that. So I kind of just sucked onto them. And then, you know, it was kind of getting to the time where it was like, okay, Meredith, do you have a show? Where's your show? So I started developing Girls 5 Eva. I brought it to them. I pitched them the idea. Then I pitched Universal the idea. And then we, you know, I wrote the pilot before we ever pitched, you know, all the streamers and the networks and stuff. And we sold it, and then we were just off to the races. So it was pretty awesome.
What's it like also to have as your stars some really amazing double threat, triple threat people like Sarah Bareilles, like Renee Lee Scolesbury, like Paula Pell, like Busy Phillips, and to bring them all together to be this group that is trying to get a second chance in the music biz?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because when I initially conceived of it, I thought to myself, like, hey, if we don't really get people who are true, you know, we'll just get comedic actors. If we can't get people who can sing, that's a little bit of emblematic of the era. It's okay. You know, there's a lot of studio magic that went on casting people mostly for, you know, number of abs and stuff like that back in the 90s. So, but then we started with Sarah. Tina Fey is really gifted at like casting ideas and also just knowing people and being able to pull strings and make phone calls. And she had seen Sarah in Waitress, and I had seen her co-hosting that Tony's with Josh Groban, and she was just so winning and funny and natural. And so we took a swing at her, and she said yes. And once we got her, and we're like, maybe Sarah Bareilles, she can do, her voice is bananas, and she's so musically talented. And it's like, maybe we can go for, you know, and then we got Renee, and we're like, oh my God, they're such good singers. And, you know, Paula and Busy are known for their, you know, comedic acting, but like they're no slouches. They have great voices. So I'm just like, I feel like the writers and I are always trying to figure out what they can't do, because everything we throw at them, they can do. They can sing, they can dance, they can act, they can turn a joke. They're, you know, Sarah's actually kind of a hilarious physical comedian. Like, you make her fall down, she does it so naturally and hilariously. So I'm just so grateful I have this dream cast, and always trying to figure out what are their weaknesses. I can't find them.
Well, given the fact you have their strengths and more strengths than weaknesses, how did that figure into putting together the second season and where you wanted to take, because sophomore seasons can go one or two ways. They can either like take you to the stratosphere, or mm-hmm. they can, oops, that first season was a one hit wonder and down the jump the shark tank we go.
Well, it's funny you say, yeah, because I was like, oh, my God, if I biff this second season, I'm just – it's the easiest headline to write. Like, well, it was a one-hit wonder. But, you know, we just – a lot of the times I feel like the way we – the writers and I and the producers and I approach it is just thinking about, like, what are the logical next steps that you would do if you were an artist? And it felt like they had the adrenaline of season one getting back together, and season two is really like, well now they – are to get, like, what are they going to do? What are they going to make? And they might have made just enough noise to get themselves a small deal on a kind of an upstart label. And so we got a little bit more comfortable this season in letting them, you know, like, go a little bit longer in songs within episodes. And, we just kind of, like, wanted to experiment with, like, what kind of album would they make, given the fact that this is the first time they actually maybe have a voice, and their, you know, Sarah Bareilles' character is not quite as talented as Sarah Bareilles as far as, you know, on the piano and things like that. She's kind of had, she gets better all the time, obviously. But, so we tried to, like, do service to that and think, like, what would their influences be? Oh, they'd probably be listening to Olivia Rodrigo. They'd probably be listening to Adele, love, you know, worship, you know, Lizzo or Beyonce. And also maybe bring in a little bit of the sound of, you know, of what they were kind of peddling a little bit back in the day, but in an updated version that's kind of on their own terms.
Mm-hmm. I was at a TikTok's new front event last night
mm-hmm.
over at the Glass House off the West Side Highway near the Intrepid Museum, and they had a singer do a song. It might have been of Sarah's work, And it was a song, as she put it, about how a barista broke my heart. And I'm wondering, you know, in terms of figuring out how these characters develop, did you get a sense that, you know, this character wants to go this way in terms of how the album should go, this, that's another way, or that they were able to find, like, personal inspirations or public inspirations that they felt would be the linchpin to make the album a success?
Yeah, you know, we try to think about what each character would want to do with the album, what they would bring to the table. We thought, you know, one of the episodes that, I think it's episode 5, they kind of decide to create this anthem casting off their old manager, their old toxic manager, and that felt very natural to something that they would want to do, to say, like, okay, we are making this this music without you, Larry. We don't need you anymore. Here are all the things that we did not like, as sort of like an anthem, you know, to feel like, yes, we're on our own. We're doing this on our own. And, of course, like he would come in and think he owns a piece of it, because that's what Larry Plum would do. And then, we thought they would try to have their own version of an empowerment anthem. So we wrote this song called BPE, Big Pussy Energy. I hope I can say that, Joe. We're just thinking about all the, you know, primarily a lot of the music is written by Dawn, but with influences from the others. And so I try to filter it a little bit through her character and the things that she might be influenced by and what would end up in the album.
Mm-hmm. Since season 1, have you and the cast and crew gotten any invites to perform in public? I got to tell you something. We just had one of the organizers of Series Fest in Denver, which just started today, the TV festival. And guess what? They would love to have you have the Girls 5 group on next year if they could come out to Denver for it.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. We'll entertain any invite. Last year, they did a really cool thing where Sarah Bareilles was live at the Hollywood Bowl. The Hollywood Bowl was empty because it was during the pandemic, but she did a concert there, and they had she brought the rest of Girls 5 Eva in, and they sang their kind of anthem from last season, which was 4 Stars. That was pretty cool. But yeah, we're open. I mean, they did Fallon last year. They sing. If we can get them together, they're busy. And like Sarah Bareilles right now is doing Into the Woods in New York for a limited run, which is cool, really, really cool. But absolutely, we're open to that.
Well, give Lauren Grimshaw Sloan, who the Initiative Speech just talked for the last half hour from Series Fest, give him a call. Start making the match.
Okay. Great.
Great Fest too, and they do usually do the they do the opening night performance or during the fest they do a night performance at Red Rocks, which I understand is a wonderful amphitheater. So,
oh my God, that's awesome!
It could be an experience.
Red Rocks is gorgeous. I heard South Park was doing like a 25-year mm-hmm. retrospective or party or something like that at Red Rocks. That's interesting.
We are speaking with Meredith Scardino. She is the executive producer and showrunner of the popular Peacock series Girls 5 Eva, which today started season 2 with the first 3 episodes up and running for you on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Meredith joins me this half hour in New York right here on our 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy Cinco de Mayo to all of you out there. Simon with you also live from the Big Apple, where it is now 71 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment meeting this with Meredith, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Tomorrow, we're back at our regular time, 3 p.m. New Pacific. Among our guests, we'll have from the popular ABC miniature golf competition, Holy Moly, now in season 4, executive producer Charles Wachtel. This is the second time on the program. And this time out, the Muppets are joining in the miniature golf action. Charles Wachtel from Holy Moly, he's live with us on Friday. And coming up on Monday, we'll have one of the co-stars of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, which kicks off tomorrow on Paramount Plus. His name is Bruce Horak. He is a very special actor, producer, and director who has been in the biz for over 25 years. This may be his breakout role, and you should know that he deals powerfully with a very special affliction. He is blind in one eye, and the other eye is almost blind. And he is an amazing, inspiring person. You will hear him as our lead guest Monday, Dream Team Meets New Pacific. Again, Star Trek Strange New Worlds premieres tomorrow on Paramount Plus, and critics are already calling it either the best Star Trek series in years. Another one said the best Star Trek series in decades. And another said the best Star Trek series since Next Generation, and a great love letter to the original way back when in the 60s on NBC. So that's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Meredith, incidentally, you and your cast went to South by Southwest, and you had the very unusual experience of having being interviewed by one of your guest stars, Andrew Rennell. So I got to ask, what was it like to sort of have the guest star turn the tables on all of you? And, oh, the other obvious question, is he coming back in season two?
Oh, well, Andrew Rannells is just the funniest, most talented. He's just absolutely wonderful. So, yes, he's coming back this season. He's in a bunch of episodes, and we're delighted to have him. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was also so nice to be interviewed by him because, I mean, it was really just a conversation. We were all just talking about the show, but he directed it really well. But it's just nice because we're on set together. We know each other. He's hilarious and so positive about the show. So it was also fun to, it was the first event we'd ever done in person. So it was just nice to talk to actual people, not on a screen, and, you know, play a first look clip and for the fans there. So that was exciting.
What was the season two making experience like last year compared to, or early this year compared to, the first time around when the pandemic was at its height?
Well, the first time around when we shot, there were no vaccines at the time. No one was vaccinated, so it was, you know, it was just a little more fearful, I would say. I mean, we were also grateful and delighted to be there, and there was a lot of joy on set and stuff, but there was just so much we didn't know at the time, and, you know, we were behind shields and masks and all that, and you know, we had an awesome COVID team that kept everybody safe, and this season we were thinking, oh, it'll be gone, it'll be nothing, and then, of course, you know, it's still around for sure. I mean, we had Omicron, we had Delta, and so, you know, no more shields, but still masks, and we found, you know, it was a little bit easier to communicate. There was a little, you know, you could be closer. I wasn't behind a shield. I felt like a stormtrooper season one. I didn't know the cast that well, and I would rush up to them with notes and they'd be like, shriek them at them through my mask and shield. But yeah, this season was a little bit better. But what ended up happening was we had a lot of scheduling, like last minute craziness because, you know, and any given day, you know, when Omicron hit, I mean, it was getting everybody. So, like, people would either be a close contact or get it themselves, and then it would kind of take an actor out or, you know, prop master or a director or cameraman or whatever, and take somebody out for 10 days while they stayed home and isolated. So we often had to have contingency plans a lot for scenes. You know, we were always just like, okay, well, what can we pull up to shoot that if, you know, we can't get this one scene? Like, there was a couple scenes that were sort of Frankenstein together in a way because, like, at one point there was somebody who had been exposed to COVID and couldn't come to work. And so we shot one part of the scene in the apartment and between two characters, and then the third character is supposed to come in. And so then by the time we picked that part up, the first character then had been exposed or had COVID. So it's like we just Frankensteined a lot of things together and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we still pulled everything off and everybody stayed healthy. And so we're really grateful. But both unique and challenging and wonderful, all in, you know, in different ways, both seasons.
Mm. It seems that you and Tina and Robert are very inspired by the New York production scene because they, you know, all three of you have based your shows here in New York, and you make great use of the surroundings of this big metropolis. And it seems that particularly over the last year, thanks to shows like yours being done in New York, and also Andy Castillo, I mentioned earlier, the head of the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, who is staying up on a great choice, Mayor Adams, one of your first great moves, personal thought, that it seems the New York production scene is back and booming, and there are more places now to film shows than before, with Netflix opening up studios, other places open studio space in Brooklyn and Bronx and Staten Island, and coming soon the Main New York Production Center, which will be opening up here not far from where I live, in Brooklyn. So it just seems that you get a sense that things are more alive now than they have been the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even just like on the street where I live, there's three different Apple shows that I feel like have been shooting on my block in the past, or maybe there's a Showtime one, there's an Apple one. There's trailers everywhere. Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere like New York. I love whenever we shoot outside and you just see cobblestones and the streets and extras and buildings and hear cars honking and have to be like, should we go again or is that fine? But I think it's awesome how much production is here now, and I love it. I mean, I grew up on the East Coast. I have been in New York for like 20 years, and so it's just where I live, and so I'd obviously love to keep shooting here as long as I could. I love it.
Do you get calls or emails or letters from, let's say, former members of Guild groups or former one-hit wonders who love your show and say, you know, can you write a role for me? Can you get me a cameo? Is there any way I can, like, come on a stage with Sarah Renee and Paul and Dizzy in one of their numbers? And if you do get that, what do you say to them?
Well, sometimes it's just scheduling. Like, we were trying to get the Backstreet Boys on with the girls this season, and we just had scheduling issues and couldn't make it work. But that would have been awesome. But it would have been amazing. I mean, there's so many amazing, talented, like, girl and boy groups from the 90s in that era that I would love to work with. I'm always open to it. So I say bring it on. If anybody wants in, give me a call.
Mm-hmm. What about Broadway talent?
Oh, we are so lucky to be in New York. So there's so many actors in our show that, are on Broadway or came from Broadway. I mean, Tina and Jeff did Mean Girls, you know, the musical on Broadway. And so a lot of that, like, we got Erica Henningsen that way, Ashley Park, this season, Gray Henson, they were all in Mean Girls. And for me, it's so convenient because it's like, oh, here's this part we wrote, or here's an idea for a character. And then Tina and Jeff be like, you know, who'd be good for that? Because I just feel like they have an encyclopedic, idea of, like, who's around. And the talent that's on Broadway and actors they've brought in or other people that they know through being just very aware of what's going on the musical world. We also had Daniel Breaker, who was in Hamilton. Renee was in Hamilton. So we're just, I like to just, you know, it's it, take anybody we can, like, you know, use the talent that's here, and there's so much. And what's cool is, you know, if you write a cameo, like, we had a cameo this season that James Monroe Englehart did a cameo for us in episode one. And, you know, he was in a show at the time on Broadway, and, you know, you can schedule it in such a way so that he could still be there for when the show starts at 7 or 8. So he could shoot during the day and then head out. So it's kind of a wonderful resource that we're in the same city as all this musical talent.
Nothing like New York, New York, city that never sleeps.
Yeah.
And the city that is home to Girls 5 Eva, which just started second season earlier today. It's on Peacock, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and in some places through your local cable operator, especially Comcast, which is the parent company of NBC Universal and Peacock. For more details about the series online, you can go to www.peacocktv.com. It's www.peacocktv.com. Girls 5 Eva, season 2, first 3 episodes, available right now on Peacock. Today. Merit Scardino, the executive producer and showrunner of the program, thank you again for taking time on opening day of season 2 to be with us. Congratulating to you and Sarah and Renee and Paula and Busy for a sensational season 1. Season 2, like I said, is off to a rip-roaring start. As the see Rotten Tomatoes with the critics' noise reaction, and have a hunch Season 2 continues to roll along, hopefully for many, many more.
Thank you so much, Simon. What a plug. That was a great plug. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Meredith, again, the invite is open for Series Fest. Give those folks a call. They would love to have you next year.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Meredith. Take care. Have a super rest of the week.
You too. Absolutely.
Meredith Scardino, executive producer and showrunner of Girls 5 Viva, joining me here in New York. One more thing before we take your leave. In case you haven't heard, earlier this week, the latest season of Law & Order Special Victims Unit wrapped up. And in case you didn't know, it turned out to be the final season for one of its key executive producers, Warren Leight. He was there early in the series when Marissa Hardigate became the solo main performer of the program. And then he came back two seasons ago to get or turn and visit the show and did a great, great job. Warren apparently is taking a break, but I have a hunch he will be, and I have a hunch he will be back not too far off. So, Warren, congratulations on the second great run with Law Special Victims Unit. It is coming back for a 24th season this fall, and probably will have a 25th before all is said and done. And, of course, you can catch Law & Order Special Victims Unit tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local NBC station, and stream either live or the next day on Peacock. Again, Peacock is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices everywhere. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us today. We promised you an extra special edition, and boy, did our trio of guests deliver. Remember, we are back at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Joining us will be Charles Wachter, the executive producer of ABC's Holy Moly, starring Season 4 on Tuesday, with the Muppets now on board. And coming up on Monday, my lead guest will be the co-star of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, starting tomorrow on Paramount Plus, and already getting great reviews, Bruce Horak, a very special, inspiring actor, and so much more. And a week from Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll showcase a brand new venture that's about to be introduced here in New York during the new breakfast called Blockboard. It uses blockchain technology not only to help advertisers, but also to create new television series, which he's doing through a special studio division. You'll meet the founder and chief executive officer, Matt Wasseloff, and the president and chief technical officer, Tarun Yadar. It's all coming up a week from Friday, BPB's New Pacific here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogs.com/televised. Check out our podcast because we have our episodes running on Spotify, our radio podcast network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other destinations. What do you think about our show today? And what's your sense of where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We respond whatever you have to say through email and social media because, as always, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Favre is head of content. Tomorrow We Tell is brought to you commercial-free this afternoon by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial and much more, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Back less than 24 hours from now, Friday, BPM Eastern Pacific Standard. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and over our podcast destination. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.